Mike and John in the morning, and we're joined this morning by 8th District Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin. Good morning, Alyssa.
Good morning.
Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
So you had an event yesterday. I want to start with this. You had an event yesterday up in Lansing. Was it at the Grand Traverse Pie Company?
Yeah, in East Lansing, yep.
And you had so many people that showed up to talk to you for the coffee chat you're doing that the fire department had to be called in.
Yeah, we didn't love that last part, but we decided to do three kind of mini town halls or coffee hours in the three counties. Just to let people know what was happening and how I made some decisions in the past week or so, and more people showed up than we were expecting, so I guess that's a good thing.
Well, people are engaged.
Yeah,
I think I kind of know the answer to this, but what's on people's minds? What's the biggest question you're doing these days?
You know, to be honest, we had a range of questions because we did Q&A. Obviously, people were focused on my decision last week, along with six other members of Congress, both who are all military and former intel, to call for an impeachment inquiry. Yeah. And it's really controversial in the district. I know that. So that's why I wanted to be out and talking to people. So there were people on all sides of it. There were people asking me, you know, to walk through my decision making. There were people who were supportive. There were people protesting. It was the whole American experience.
When you talk to constituents about that decision, for those folks who maybe question it, I mean, there's certainly a contingent that welcomed it, have been asking you to do this for a while. There's a sizable contingent that questions why now, why this.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was interesting, Congressman Fred Upton yesterday was at the Detroit Economic Club, and he said while he didn't support the inquiry process, he did support the committee's asking questions and that there needed to be answers. So why not take that route?
Yeah.
Why go all the way and endorse the inquiry?
Yeah, for me, it comes down to like the first order question of what the president acknowledged and what his lawyer acknowledged openly, which was that the president of the United States reached out to a foreigner, a foreign president, and asked for dirt on a political opponent, on an American. And for me, that is just something that just got to the kind of heart of what I feel like is my oath of office. And it gets to the heart of our political process. I don't want foreigners playing in our elections. Because if it's a Republican president today, it could be a Democratic president reaching out to China or North Korea, and it just goes on and on from there. For me, pushing for an inquiry gave it a seriousness that I thought it deserved. And I came out with a bunch of folks who are all former military and former intel because for us, we just felt like this was different, particularly because it was forward looking. It was about 2020, not looking backwards. You know, the many investigations that have come beforehand have all been about looking backwards and hadn't been so clearly stated as by the president, who acknowledged that he did this. Also, it's important that it you know, people actually show up and come and talk and tell us if we're wrong. You know, if this thing, if he didn't do it, the onus is on the administration to explain that they didn't do it. Come and talk to us. I'm keeping an open mind. But it started for me when they acknowledged that they did indeed reach out to a foreign leader and ask for dirt on an American.
So how do you answer when people look at that transcript, the partial transcript that was released by the White House, and they say, well, he was just asking for the president of Ukraine to look into corruption. Why is that a bad thing?
Well, he did say he's asking him to do him a favor. And my whole thing is, if you're concerned about the Biden family, if you're concerned about a political opponent and corruption, go to the American FBI. Go to American law enforcement. That's how our rules and laws work. You don't need to go to a foreigner, especially not a foreign leader who is, you know, sort of dependent on us for support. And that, to me, was just the wrong way to go about it. I know I've been asked lots of times about, well, why not look into President Biden and his son? I have no special knowledge on what they did or didn't do. I just know that when we look into corruption of an American, we go to the FBI.
Where do you think this is all going to go from here?
Well, one of the things that we've been asking for in Congress from senior leaders is that the process be strategic, clear, and efficient. So you see that a number of committees were held back. They're not at home in their districts the way I am. They're continuing their work. I don't think this needs to be a year of our time. I hope it's not. There's lots of other things I would much rather be talking about and working on. And that's my job now, is to make sure that while other committees are working on this process, we're doubling down on things like prescription drug pricing and clean water, which is the fight we're about to have with the Pentagon in the next couple of weeks.
And we'll talk about that in a second. But just to sort of wrap up the impeachment part of this. So the notion that that the president used his position to get potentially, as you put it, you know, political dirt, as it's been termed, and that that's, you know, breaking his oath of office. Do you feel, though, that, and as you said, they should contact American law enforcement, mm-hmm. but is there at all a concern, because there does seem to be the notion amongst a lot of the public that, in fact, maybe there is some corruption there. And so why, again, that question, why is the president being singled out for this if he's just trying to find corruption?
Again, the way that we root out corruption, the FBI was built rooting out corruption, first of the mob and then of lots of other people, terrorist organizations. That is what they are designed to do. If we are concerned about corruption of an American citizen, we go to American law enforcement and handle it in proper channels. Trust our law enforcement. They are good at their jobs. So that, to me, is the way to do it, not to go to a very junior foreign leader, someone who depends completely on us, right, for military support, and say, hey, I want you to do me a favor, which is what he asked in the transcript. I just don't think it's a precedent we want set for any future election. Imagine if 10 years from now, it's just totally normal to go to the Iranians or the North Koreans and say, hey, do me a favor, create a cyber attack, go get some dirt for me on an American opponent for a governor's race or for a congressional race. That just is a reality I cannot stomach. So I wanted to send the signal that this to me was something different. It was beyond the pale. And I hope that even if people don't agree with me, they at least give me the benefit of the doubt that I didn't do this lightly, that I didn't do this because someone's been pressuring me for 6 months, because sure, people have been, but I did it because the events on the ground changed as I understood them, and I did it because I felt it was a matter of integrity.
Now, the impeachment process is a political process, ostensibly. So how would you answer those that say, well, look, we have an election coming up in a year's time. Why not let that be the final arbiter?
Yeah. So listen, I was pretty much in that camp for 6 months since the Mueller report came out. I hadn't been calling for impeachment. I thought that an election was the clearest and cleanest way to decide this matter in 2020. But I think we have to be a nation of rules and laws, and that at a certain point, we have to say we cannot accept certain things in our democracy. And for me, this crossed a threshold. And I just, no one else in the world gets away with being able to do things that violate the law and not having at least an inquiry to look into it, some sort of investigation. So I think that that for me was different. And it came down to, you know, the bones of our democracy. I really do believe that the institutions we have are the bones of our democracy. And if we start eating away at those bones, we're not doing right by our oath and for our kids. I feel passionately about defending democracy. And to me, this crossed a line.
So clean water, another issue, as you just mentioned. You said a fight coming up with the Pentagon. So
yeah.
Talk about that.
PFAS. That's the big fight that's coming up with the Pentagon. I'm on the Armed Services Committee. Based on my background, they put me on that committee and the Homeland Security Committee. And in Armed Services, we do the Pentagon's budget. Very, very large. Right now, it's sitting at $733 billion. Wow. So that's how you pull the strings at the Pentagon. And I know this because I used to be at the Pentagon and was on the other side creating the bills and the budgets. And one of the things that we are arguing about right now in real time with the Pentagon is their responsibility for PFAS, particularly around our military bases. We have some deeply contaminated water around our bases, particularly up north, Grayling, Oscoda, and Selfridge, other places. And the Pentagon is resisting getting off that foam, right? We've asked for them to transition off firefighting foam with PFAS by 2029. So they've got some time, and they're resisting that.
What is the reason for the resistance?
They just say, we don't know that we're going to have a good alternative by then. We can't commit. We can't commit to 2029. I, of course, wanted it to be sooner than 2029. They also are resisting putting up funds to clean up what they've already sort of spilled or leaked out of the bases. And I had the head of the, you know, Pentagon's PFAS task force in to come and see me last week with everything going on. And we are just, you know, we had a nice but blunt conversation. And right now we're trying to finish up the Pentagon's budget in the next month, and it's going to come down to it. And we're going to have to make a choice about whether we risk voting no on the Pentagon's budget because of PFAS. I never thought it would come to this. But they're gearing up for a fight, and the Michigan representatives on both sides of the aisle are obviously seeing it from a Michigander's perspective.
And that's because Michigan is really at the forefront of this issue.
We are.
Do you sense in Washington that there's kind of a cluelessness on this, or they haven't yet, it hasn't really impacted them?
Yeah, I think people have no idea how ahead we are on this issue. And I'll give you an example. You know, we have four sites here in Livingston County that are PFAS contaminated. So I get sworn in, it's January 3rd, and I see a representative from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I say, hi, you know, it's my first week. I just joined the bipartisan PFAS task force. You know, it's members from across the country who care about PFAS. Are you joining? And she said, what's PFAS?
I was going to say that's probably the response.
She had no idea. And I said, you're from Milwaukee, like dollars to donuts. You've got some PFAS around your military bases, around your some of your advanced manufacturing places from the past. And she went back and looked at it. And now all the Wisconsin representatives joined the task force. Michigan, because of Flint and lead and our water issues, we're looking harder at PFAS now. So we've found more sites than anywhere in the country. But I think we're really on the leading edge, because if we've got it, so does the entire Midwest.
So, again, you had two other chats that were set up in Heartland today and then tomorrow in Rochester. But you've had to move those sites because, obviously, you're going to get some people that want to talk with you.
Yeah, after yesterday, we got the sense that people wanted to have a conversation. There were people on all sides of this issue. So we moved the location. It's 11 o'clock this morning at Cromaine Library in Heartland on off Heartland Road. Hope people come out. And, you know, I've always said, I want respectful, civil dialogue. We don't all have to agree, and we won't, but we can disagree respectfully. And that's something that I believe in deeply from my background, and I'm going to live up to regardless of how crazy Washington gets.
All right, 11 o'clock today, Heartland Cromaine Library. You might want to get there early to get a seat. I got to ask you just real quick before we let you go. Getting questions about road, taking care of the roads here in Michigan.
Yes.
Any help from...
Well, we need a once-in-a-generation infrastructure package from the federal government. My understanding is that Speaker Pelosi and Donald Trump agreed on a top-line number in the trillions. I mean, really big numbers. And now we have a bill that's about to pop. It's supposed to come out this fall. That is the big infrastructure package we've been waiting for. As you can imagine, as we know here in Michigan, the big question is how are you going to pay for it? Right? Where's the money going to come from? We know that story here. But I believe that before Thanksgiving, we'll see an infrastructure package, and that is our responsibility in Congress.
All right. I'm sure you're going to get questions about that
today,
too. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Melissa Slotkin.